Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you?
Hi.
We have the quick intro, which must mean we have a guest, and we do for the first time, somehow. And I say somehow like I'm not the one that could just change this. But either way, we do have Sam Vecini of The Athletic, of the Game Theory Podcast. Sam, how are you?
I'm doing well. So this is exciting. I typically do not listen to basketball podcasts. I throw so much of my time into basketball that I don't want to consume it when I'm not working on basketball, right? But this show, along with a couple others, like I'll listen to Jason Timpf as well, this is one of the very precious few shows that I will listen to and that I will consume. So I'm very excited to be here. I love the Dunker Spot. This is great.
Oh, there we go. So, yeah. See, now I'm feeling all warm and fuzzy. That's what I'm talking about. If we can make the Sam cut off, we do it. But we are here. First rookie report of the season. We normally do these monthly. This is the first time we've had a guest on for one of these, so I'm excited to roll through some of these rookie names, get some early takes out the way. Before we dig into the list, a couple of quick disclaimers. One, we're not talking about literally every rookie that has done a good thing. So if we are not talking about the rookie on your favorite team, that does not mean that we haven't watched them or that we hate them. This is just the list that we're starting out with. We're going to branch out. We're going to be doing rookie reports throughout the season. So please don't get upset. Beyond that, just
Orlando fans, I lost my Tristan Da Silva battle.
Tristan Da Silva will be talked about. We will absolutely have some salon talk on this podcast. All of the rookies in Toronto will absolutely get a mention on this here podcast. Don't you worry. But again, we have a select list for this very first one. Before we dig into the list, Sam, just a general question for you. As you do a ton of scouting and college work on top of the NBA work, yes, in general, like how has your process of scouting evolved over the years?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I was talking about this with one of my friends who works for an NBA team yesterday, and they were just like, how do you keep track of all of this, basically? Because, you know, Steve's been on that side. You know, you understand that different teams do it different ways, right? Like, for instance, I'm not going to say specific organizations, but like there are a few organizations that have scouts do both NBA and college. There are other organizations that have it split where there's a pro personnel side and there is a college scouting side. And then like even some, you know, intrepid, smart organizations now even have like a high school scouting side where they're like really trying to dive in and dig into the weeds of the tape there and all that stuff. So I came up originally doing like more college basketball centric coverage-ish, right? Along with NBA draft stuff. So I think that the more I've gotten into pure scouting, maybe, that stuff has gone by the wayside. Like I was explaining to this person yesterday, like you could tell me that Illinois is ranked number 8 in the country. You could tell me that they are not ranked right now. I have no idea. I just know that they have Kasparis Jakusonis and Will Riley and Tomislava Vicic and like Ben Humrichhausen and like a bunch of prospects that like I'm really interested in and that I'll be watching throughout the course of the season. That's something that I used to get kind of caught up on and I just kind of don't anymore. Really trying to like not be on social media as much, not trying to be as engaged maybe, and trying to form my own takes on all of this, right? I think that when you're younger, like I started this, I had like a freaking national job when I was 24 years old or something, right? And when I started this, there's like that imposter syndrome that you get on some level. So you're kind of like sorting through all the information you can and then also making your own scouting insights, things like that. Now, like obviously there's a degree of confidence. I've been doing this for a decade. That's been there for, you know, quite a few years now. And I think I've just like kind of removed all of the outside stuff, which is another reason why, like oftentimes I don't like listening to other shows because I worry about it kind of filtering into where I'm at a little bit. And I don't love that process. So I'm cognizant of where other people have prospects ranked when it comes to the draft, but I try to kind of filter that out at this point. And I think that's maybe the biggest way that it's evolved. But beyond that, I mean, you know, as you guys know, you do this all the time. Like you just get better at this. You understand what matters more. You know what I mean? You understand the skill sets that translate a little bit better. And I think that that is maybe where I've kind of gotten a little bit better at this, is kind of understanding and being able to filter through the information and all of the different inputs for each prospect and understand how it's going to work a little bit better.
Okay, I like that.
I think that's key. I think that's key to be able to filter that out. I can't imagine with the scouting portion, especially with kind of the loud noises and opinions that can go along with that, having to do that. Because I remember I was like, hey, I'm just looking at Zach Edey's footwork. Like, I just want to see his feet on defense. And people are like, well, it's not going to matter. Because I'm like, that's fine. I just want to see how he slides his feet.
And, but it is going to matter, yeah. Like 100%.
Yeah, and then you know, you take a piece of that. It's like, oh, yeah, look, summer league, post-ups kind of work. And then you just build from there. But it's kind of, right. I can imagine that'd be difficult if you're just stuck in take land.
Yeah, like that's the other thing, too. This is something that I had this conversation yesterday with this person that works for a team. We were just like, this person had not literally submitted a ranking yet of draft prospects to their organization, because they just don't, that's not the way their organization does it. I have to literally earlier this week put out a top 100 board that is going to be this living, breathing thing throughout the course of the year, where I am undoubtedly going to look fucking stupid at some point with somebody that I have ranked in the place that I can't, like, I shouldn't have them ranked, because you're trying to filter through high school data still, you know, from the preseason that you've watched. And, you know, okay, is this guy just starting slow? We're still dealing with like a 7-game sample, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's an incredibly complex thing. But, you know, whereas teams on their side, they don't have the public scrutiny. They can just go about their process and make their decisions. And throughout the year, you have scrutiny from your bosses, which is more important, mm-hmm. but it's a different kind of scrutiny on some level. So you always, I always have that public kind of whatever happening, where there is somebody in the public that is calling me a moron. And on the private side, they don't have to deal with that. And I think that's nice for them, mm-hmm. but it's definitely an experience doing this publicly.
I would imagine. So last general question I have for you. How many games would you say it takes for you to feel comfortable with a prospect?
Yeah. Yeah. Good question. On tape, like 3 or 4, I would like to watch.
Okay.
Like really feel good about like a large scale, like big picture where it is. Like Jaeger Demen at BYU wow. this year, a guy that I have like as a top 5 prospect in the class. I watched probably 4 or 5 of his games with Rayall last year, maybe a couple more than that. I didn't like him at all as a prospect. I thought this was a pass first player. Couldn't really shoot it. Didn't love the way that, like, I love the way he saw the court, but I didn't see how it would translate, because I didn't see how he could score in the NBA. And if you're going to be a pass first player, you have to have that scoring weapon to open up the passing ability at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. This year at BYU, first and foremost, I start getting notes from people on the NBA side that are going to these practices that are like, dude, this kid looks amazing. He looks unbelievable. He's going to be really good. Then I start to watch his first 4 games or so. He looks great. Looks unbelievable. Looks like a top 5 pick. You just go, oh, this is what this is supposed to look like. He's manipulating defenders with his eyes. He's unbelievable in ball screens. He swings the ball quickly. He processes the game at a level that is different than other players in this class. Really only than a couple others, maybe. Mm-hmm. But you watch him against Ole Miss and you watch him against Providence last night. Look, I saw up until, I didn't watch the game. I just look at the box score. I'm watching it literally as soon as we're done. But like, I see that he went like 0-for-8 and went 0-for-4 from 3, right? So I had questions about the shot coming in. He shot at a 44% clip coming into that game. Throughout the year, like, I'm going to have to figure out, can this kid shoot or not? Like, I don't know. That's something I don't know an answer to. Mm-hmm. But I feel very comfortable in terms of, okay, this kid thinks the game at a different level. He's 6'9". He's a real point guard. Like, you can figure out how to make a lot of this work. But in terms of final evaluation, like, it's a living, breathing thing. Like, Daryl Morey has a quote that I always say, it comes from this book, Super Forecasting, where you have strong opinions weakly held, where you always feel very confident in your opinion and you are willing to fight for it because that's what you believe is right. But when the information changes, you change. Mm-hmm. It's okay. Like, these players are living, breathing people that are going to develop. Like, RJ Barrett keeps getting better and better and better. And he's like in his seventh year in the NBA, right? So changing that information as you go, I think, is really important.
I figured it popped me because I always had questions for scouts, and on everyone has their different process. As you know a player, you get to know a player. Are there specific matchups that you may want to see? Are there specific games that you may avoid? You know, I know one person was like, I don't want to see them play them because they're just going to play zone. I'm not going to get anything from it.
Yeah.
Or, hey, I want to see, you know, you mentioned the box score. You see a game. It's like, I wonder how that happened. How's that process go for you?
No, 100%. Like, I was super interested, you know, just to bring it back to Demon, because I find him interesting. Like, I was really interested in watching the Mississippi game that occurred over like Thanksgiving weekend, because I know that Chris Beard teams are going to heat up the ball, right? And that's the thing that I really wanted to see. How does he deal with ball pressure? Honestly, in that game, he didn't deal super well with ball pressure, but he still had, like, I think I tracked like 9 or 10 potential assists in the first half, and his team converted like 2 of them. Right. So he figured it out even in spite of that ball pressure. Then Ole Miss like really heated him up in the second half. And I thought he struggled a little bit more to deal with that. And then from what I've been told about the Providence game, Providence really heated him up with ball pressure. So those games, situations like that, where I know that the opposing team has the wherewithal to cause this person's weaknesses problems, I want to see how they adjust. And more than anything, I think the NBA is part of being a successful NBA player is just problem solving, right? What happens when the other team takes away the best thing that I do? And, you know, having an answer for that and being able to adjust in that way is critical.
I like that. I like that. All right, let's get into some of these rookies. We will start at the top of the class, Zachary Richardson for Atlanta. Heading into this recording anyway, averaging 11.6 points per game, 3.5 rebounds, 1.4 assists, 52% on twos, only 28% from three so far. So, Sam, I guess broadly, what were your feelings on Zachary coming into the league, and has that shifted at all from what you've seen so far?
So just big picture, I ended up not having anybody in like my tier one or tier two of draft prospects last year. First year that I've been doing this, that's ever happened. So I didn't see a lot of like no doubter all-stars. So like tier one for me would be somebody like Luka. For Victor, I had like him in like a separate tier because Victor's just a joke and like there's nothing you can do about that, right? Mm-hmm. But like Luka is a player that I had as like a first tier player. Cade Cunningham is a guy that I had as a first tier player. I had like Chet Holmgren, Brandon Miller was a tier two player for me. I think I had like LaMelo as a tier two player. And that's not to say that these guys don't, you know, prove me wrong all the time. Like Anthony Edwards, I think I had as a tier two and he is, you know, going to be a superstar. Right. But this was the first class that pre-draft, I did not have a tier one or tier two grade. I had Richardson in the top group, like as a tier three guy, which I consider like high leverage starters. Mm-hmm. Right. And I've been largely happy with what I've seen from Richardson. What I will say is that he's a player that has been streakier from three than what I think just the overall numbers say. Like he hit 39% from three in 57 games for Bourque last year in France, playing both Euro Cup and French League competition. But if you split that into the first half of the year and the second half of the year, the first like 3 months of the year, I think he hit probably like 48% from three. It was insane. Like he was just on an absolute heater. Then for like a 2 month stretch or so, he hit like 20% from three and couldn't hit the ocean from like the beach line from the coastline. Right. So you had no chance. Then in like the playoffs and like the later portion of the season, you got hot again and started to hit shots. So I think that that's just kind of who he is as a shooter. So in terms of that, like I kind of expected that there would be an adjustment in terms of the shot. Mm-hmm. What I have liked about Ricochet so far is I feel like he gets himself into the right positions consistently. He's a really smart basketball player. Mm-hmm. He is always finding little areas to cut and take advantage of Trae Young's ability in ball screens and his gravity, how the roller is rolling, everything like that. He understands how to space. I think defensively, I always loved his ability to play on the weak side defensively. I think he always had really good positioning. He knew how to use his size. He's like 6'9 and a half, 6'10, knew how to use his length on the weak side to be able to just kind of take up space and then close out onto shooters. I think that is basically proven pretty well for a rookie to this point in his career. It's just going to be the shot. Like he's not a super athlete. He's not really a shot creator. That's why like there was a bit of a mix on where he was as a draft prospect. Mm-hmm. Some people really loved him. Some people thought he was just kind of a good starter. Right. I tended to fall more on like, he's going to be a really excellent starter in the NBA and make nine figures, and everyone, whoever took him was going to be happy. I thought he just doesn't, you know, he still to me does not look like a number one overall pick in a normal draft. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I think the point you made about kind of high leverage starters, I think a lot of people can look at the draft class and write it off to a degree, but there are players out there growing and having impact in the minutes they get. I think the point about Ricochet's cutting, that's the biggest thing that's always stood out to me with him, especially this season. The feel that he has and the timing that he has. And, you know, if you are ball watching, he's going to cut backdoor. If he's at the top of the key and maybe our offense is stalled, he's going to cut backdoor. If he's getting a pin down, whether it's from a wing or Trae Young, he does a really good job of, I'm going to come off slow and then, oh, you're trailing, real quick move, get a curl, try and finish. You know, if there's a driver, a post up, he relocates, he finds gaps, as Sam said. I think just the fact that like even possessions where he's spaced in the corner and he sees his man kind of doing the weak side low man rotation, he's like, actually, let me just slide up to this bend right here. Yeah. Right before the break, and I'm just gonna put right here because you can see me. Like he does a good stuff there. So I think that's important considering we're waiting on the shot to come. The one thing, as Sam was talking about the shot, he's not hesitant. I'll tell you that much. No. He's not hesitant at all. That he gets it. It's going up. It's going quick. I think the other thing that kind of popped me was just the willingness to drive. You know, you look at him, it's like, I don't care if you're Evan Mobley. I'm trying to attack. Like he has some good footwork. Yeah. If he gets a handoff, he'll turn that corner. Interesting to see some of the touch on some of the floaters. It looks really good, but then it's also like, hey, that's a very tall person. I'm not sure if we had to do that, but that's, you know, a young rookie deal. And then there's also the drives where, you know, he wants to catch and go, and it's a veteran guard, elbow, hip. Oh, my dribble is no longer here. So those are the strength things. So it's interesting.
Yeah.
I like it.
He's just skinny. Like it's going to take a minute for him. Right. Like, in terms of just like the physical body, like, I don't know how much the frame is going to, he'll fill out, he'll get stronger, but like, he doesn't have a frame that's going to be like, all right, but guys are going to bounce off of me. Right. I'm not going to have those kind of shoulders where I can just put my shoulder into a dude and just get all the way to the rim. Like Jalen Johnson is a great example on his own team, right? Like Jalen's frame just physically is different than Zach's. And that's why, like, when they drafted him, I was like, these two are perfect complements for one another. Mm-hmm. And I was generally okay with Atlanta drafting him, even though I had him at fifth, just because I had all these guys in the same tier. And I loved the combination of Ricochet and Johnson long-term as being their kind of 3-4 of the future, especially if you're going to build around a Trae Young centric team where you need to have that kind of length and athleticism defensively for guys to move around and fly around.
Yeah, I think just to bounce off the general off-ball point with Zachary, like the cutting has popped, as you both talked about. We have to see where the shooting's going to land. Like, I have really enjoyed Atlanta just using him as a screener. Like, he seems to have a really good timing for that kind of thing. Like, I'm going to angle my body in a way. It's not going to be a bone-crushing scream. I'm going to angle my way to force this guy over. I'm slipping into the space. And then once he gets the ball on the short roll, like, he is a quick processor, so he can make plays from there. So, like, the fact that they have been willing to move him around, like, they'll let him run a handoff or a ball screen. As you mentioned, some of the scoring limitations, I think, limit the effectiveness of that right now. But they are moving him all around the board. And I think, to your point about him projecting as just a high-level starter, the fact that there isn't a thing that I really feel bad about when it comes to him. Yeah. As a positive to me, like if he's on the ball, like I trust if he doesn't have, he's going to get rid of it at the very least. Off the ball, he knows how to relocate and things like that. Again, we have to see where the shot's going to land. And so he just feels like a compliment to a lot of high-level talent. That's what Trae Young is. So, like, I've enjoyed that portion. The scoring and more specifically the finishing is where my brow kind of raises just to see, like, if he figures it out, what does this mean for him as this level of a player? Because as you mentioned, like, not a super high-level athlete. The handle does need to get better. And even when he gets inside the yard, he just loves getting into these pivots and up fakes and let me get into the step through real quick. And so I'm glad that he's able to kind of find these windows as a scorer. On the other hand, I'm just like, ooh, yeah. If a smart team just sits on that, then what does this mean? Mm-hmm. What is going to be the adjustment to that part? But yeah, like even if he doesn't ultimately figure that out and turn into a 20 point per game guy, like he seems like he's going to be good. Like he just knows how to play basketball. So I really enjoyed him. A quick question that I'll pose to the both of you. I'll start with you, Sam, because you mentioned the weak side defense. How have you felt about the on-ball defense so far?
It's always hard with rookies that are that skinny, right? Like I do think he can get moved around. They often, I feel like, do give him like semi-difficult assignments so that Jalen doesn't have to deal with them. I haven't been like blown away by it, I guess I would say. I haven't thought it's been disastrous for them by any stretch, but I haven't thought it's been particularly good.
Okay.
He's a rookie though. Like with that stuff, like I always just am like, okay, he's 6'10". He knows where to be as long as he gets like stronger through his legs. The other thing with him is he needs to play with a little bit more bend, I think, as well. That's one thing where like I feel like he doesn't access any of his potential power through his torso or through his hips or anything. If he can play with a little bit more bend, I think that would help as well.
I got you. Steve, what are you seeing?
I think he slides his feet one-on-one, works to compete, uses his size. Yeah. Aside from the physical limitations, you see that. I think the one area of opportunity for me is probably just screen navigation. It can get a little interesting on ball, particularly. That's like a nitpick. Off ball, it's not so bad. But on ball, sometimes that gap gets created. And now, you know, if we're in a drop, he's chasing. And so that size isn't necessarily as felt. So that's just more reps and understanding the timing and the rhythm of how to get over, how to close that gap. Now I can slide back in front. You know, CJ McCollum was licking his chops the other night. Like, okay, cool. Well, two dribbles and now you are behind me. Let me get to my shot and those kind of things. But that'll come with time.
Okay. Because what I had in my notes on that front, like I thought about the Cleveland games and he got Darius Garland. Say, I had a little bit of Donovan Mitchell too, but had Darius Garland. And on certain reps, he's doing his work early. Let me chew up this space. I'm going to get into the body. I'm going to stay attached. We're cool. Or we can turn this into a late switch against Evan Mobley. That's fine. And then Darius Garland just had the ball go on. Like, hey, how about I just reject some of these? Because they're trying to keep these down the sideline anyway. And Zach would just do the thing. Let me jump out here because you're trying to get over the screen. I'm going to beat you to the spot. And then Garland just goes downhill. And now he's able to lead the dance. So it's like, ooh, because the recovery speed isn't quite there yet. So, like, that's something that I'm keeping an eye on. It's not a big red flag for me, but it's like, okay, how is he going to navigate that part if they're going to put him on guards anyway? Like if he's just going to be stuck with defending wings, like I don't think it's going to be as big of a deal. But in terms of the overall scheme versatility, if he can figure that portion out, just knowing how much space he actually has and can give before navigating, and then naturally as he gets stronger and just learns angles better and stuff, he'll get better at the navigation part. But that's what I had on it.
And the big thing for him too with that is Kobe Bufkin will actually matter now in terms of like his development. Mm-hmm. If he can become what I thought he would be, I thought he was going to be like a really solid two-way guard coming into the NBA. He would make it so Zach doesn't have to deal with those guys. Mm-hmm. Because even if you play Trey, Dyson, Zach, Jalen, let's say three of those four guys, right? You probably will have to deal with those matchups less and less often, especially because most teams don't have two guards, much like the Cavs, where Dyson's always going to take one of those assignments. I think they hope that Kobe can always take one of those assignments. If you can reduce that impact where Zach has to deal with these 6 foot, 6 foot one guards because you're trying to avoid Trey being on them, I think that would really, really help. So Kobe Bufkin's development for him, I think, is almost like a little bit tied to Zach's development in terms of where he will be defensively.
Gotcha. Any other quick Risa-Shea thoughts before we move to the next rookie?
He's the fourth youngest player since 73-74 to have 30 or more points and zero turnovers.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Hashtag Steve Stats.
There's a fun fact for you.
There we go. I like that.
Take away the hashtag. Remove it. I rebuke you.
You don't like Steve Stats? Okay, fair enough.
No.
We'll workshop it.
I love it.
We'll workshop.
I'm here for it.
See what we got. Well, all I need is one, Steve. All I need is one. moving to Washington. One of the Washington rookies at the very least. We'll get to the others on a later episode. But Alex Saar, averaging 10.5 points, 6.2 rebounds, 2.1 assists, and 1.8 blocks so far this year. 48% on twos, only 24% from three. I don't quite know what to do with Alex Saar. Like I say on the pod all the time, like I am not Mr. Draft. Like my entry point to a lot of these guys in terms of the deep dives is generally summer league, and I can just kind of build the base from there. And when we did our,
because you don't like college basketball.
Hey, that's another pod.
I'm struggling with it this year, Nikias. I'll tell you that. Like I used to love it. I'm struggling a little bit with it this year, to be honest with you.
It is an interesting concept of basketball. But when Steve and I did our Summer League takeaways episode, I think I said, like, I don't know if Saar is going to be like rookie of the year. Like, I'm not going to place that bet. I do feel like his highlights are probably just going to be better than everyone else's at the very least. And so if you're watching a game, if you're scrolling social media and then here's this random Saar dunking on Wimby clip, or I think the Mexico City game with Washington and Miami where he's just sprinkling in fadeaways over Bam. I'm just like, okay. Then you watch a full Wizards game. It's like, oh, these plays are few and far between. And I do still find myself more intrigued than anything, though. Like, I'm not out on Saar. Because I think when you have someone that's that athletic and has the level of ball skills that he does, it's an interesting baseline, particularly at the five. Like, I think about when they use him as a hub, when they go into some of their high split stuff, the fact that he can, like, I'm going to dribble to this handoff. Actually, I'm just going to take this slow foot center off the bounce and just beat you there. Like, that intrigues me. But then I also wonder, half jokingly, has he used his left hand on a finish this year?
Really bad finisher. He's always been a really bad finisher around the basket.
So it's just, I'm so intrigued, but I'm also, I just toss my hands up sometimes because I just don't know what to make of the offense right now.
Yeah, you're going full Ricky Bobby mode where you don't know what to do with your hands right now. Look, he has moments, I completely agree with you, where like the highlights are incredible. Like I remember maybe like sixth or seventh game of the year, he like grabbed a rebound, went full length of the court, went like Euro into like a two-hand like sidewinder pass to Bilal, I think, cutting at the basket. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, what the fuck just happened? Like, this is a joke. Mm-hmm. Like, this is not normal for seven footers to be able to do this. In general, though, I think he has not been very good this year. I'm not surprised by that. I always saw him as a more significant long-term project mm-hmm. than anything. The big thing for, and this is something I talk about with these guys that are 6'9" and taller that can theoretically do things, mm-hmm. right? The Jaden McDaniels, I used to talk about this with all the time. Yes, you can dribble for being 6'9". You can dribble for being 7 foot tall. Once you get to the NBA, you just have to be able to dribble.
Yeah.
Like there's not, you can't just be like giving these guys the benefit of the doubt. Because you're like, oh man, like he's 7 foot. He can do this. He can do that. Well, if your handle's loose, someone's going in to dig that handle out.
Yeah.
And they're going to get the ball. So you need to be able to consistently tightly handle the ball. You need to be able to consistently knock down shots. And right now, there's nothing that's all that consistent with Alex other than the weak side rim protection, mm-hmm. I would argue. The weak side rim protection is always there. And he is a fairly switchable defender even right now. But on offense, I think it's pretty rough. I like the fact that they're giving him all the opportunity in the world in order to develop some of these skills. I think that's really what he needs more than anything is just skill work and reps to be able to understand what he's seeing on the court. I don't think this is anything resembling like a James Wiseman situation. If Washington fans are like a little bit worried based on like the full games, because I think that Saar has a backing defensively where you can play him next to like a more powerful, bigger body, and he can be your weak side rim protector. He can be a switchable defender who can go out and slide out there. But the offensive game it's rough right now. And we knew that coming in. Like he has skills, but the way that the skill set glues together right now doesn't really exist yet in terms of the way he thinks the game. He always catches and stops. Like, I feel like very rarely is he catching and making a quick swing or, you know, driving and quickly attacking. Everything is in a little bit of slow motion for him on offense. I just have always thought it was going to take a lot of time for him, which is why I like the fact that Washington took him, because I knew that that organization would be patient with him.
Oh, that makes sense. Like, I was curious with him coming in because of the whole like 4 versus 5 thing and some of the noise that was coming out about that. And then ultimately they get JV. I'm like, okay, well, if you're going to play JV and he has experience, obviously he can post up, but like they'll play him above the break. He'll take the slingshot 3, but more importantly, he'll operate as a hub. So he'll have room to operate inside the yard. So like, to your point, I'm glad that he is at least in an ecosystem where he can just kind of explore the game. And I think to your point, with more of the, I guess more like set possessions to where he can just kind of catch the ball at the elbow and then make a read. Like, some of the passing flashes have been fun, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But to your point, that's more of, I am standing still. There's cutting going on around me. I can pick this out and do so, which is still valuable. But the live dribble.
I think it's rarely quick either. Mm-hmm. I think too. Like, it's, I'm going to stand here, I'm going to survey, and then I'm going to find the cutter kind of thing.
Yeah. So like, even that gives you a baseline to do some stuff, but I am curious to see how the rest of the live dribble stuff is going to develop for him. Actually, Steve, I tossed it to you. We can flip it to the defense. What have you seen from Alex Sarr defensively?
I wanted to talk about his offense.
Oh, well, my apologies. You can talk about the offense then.
I was just saying, I think for me, it's, you wonder what it would look like if the context changes. The league is just not cooperating with him at the 4. If you just watch, it's, hey, you're out there. Help, maybe recover. Yeah. You know, he'll mix in a few makes. It's because it's going up. And then, all right, close out. You do want to drive. Well, you drove into me. Now, what is your decision? Because you're not going to overpower me. So are you going to do the spin move hook? Are you going to, you know? So it's kind of like, I don't know if there's a thing right now. I think I've liked his roles. Yeah. When he has the ability and it's not an automatic switch, he gets out pretty quick. But then it's on the short roll. Okay, what's the decision making on, am I taking a fadeaway? Am I just going to take a regular shot? Am I going to catch and try and attack and now meet the big? You know, how often does he get there? Am I predetermining my drive and now, oh, I don't have anything. Where's the next play? Like, I think that's the kind of stuff that's going to improve for him. The numbers are going to be the numbers. I think defensively, he gives the effort. He's got the size. The weak side protection has been good. If you don't hit him in his chest, he will just stay there. He's very tall. So he's just going to hold the spot. And, well, I can block your shot. So I've liked that. Pick and roll defense sometimes can be an adventure, but he's young. So that's fair. But it's incomplete for me because I don't know what to do with this Wizards contest.
Well, it's funny. Like, so we're going to talk about Eve Missy later on, right? And the thing with Eve, I almost feel like with Alex, there are like too many skills that he has, and like he's struggling to make decisions quickly on what to do. With Eve, it's almost just simpler, right? Okay, I catch a short roll, I have a crease, I'm just going to the rim and diving and scoring. Or, okay, I have a body here, I'm catching, I'm looking directly to the corner, I'm going up to the wing, or I'm resetting behind me, right? It just is a lot more streamlined. I don't think it's streamlined for Alex when I watch him right now, because he has, okay, I can dribble, I can reset, I can pass, I can try and take this little floater, I can try and drive. Like, he has more in his tool set almost, and that's causing almost like, I don't want to say like paralysis by analysis, but like maybe a little bit of that when I watch him. It just feels slower.
No, that's an interesting theory. Like, he has too many things he wants to try to do. And so picking the right one is going to slow things down. And as you know, like in the NBA, you got to make your decisions quick. Defense is reset too quickly. Right. Like, you know, the NBA that doesn't play defense, but like the teams get set up way too quick if you hold a catch and hold. So
you're just trying to bait Steve today. This is the best.
No, I can't do that to him, especially today. I can't do that to him. Later episode, we'll see. But no, like, I think the defense has been, it's been pretty cool to me. Like, you both have mentioned the weak side rim protection, so I'm not going to hang there too long. Like, watching him on a drop, like, he seems to have a decent feel for it. Like, I'm going to bait the ball handler, reach out a little bit, but I'm going to hang back. Like, he does seem to turn pretty well, when he's asked to do more aggressive things and it's not a switch, that's where I get a little hazy, because he chews up space incredibly well. But then getting out of that and getting back to the big is where it gets a little hazy for him. And if he's at the five trying to do that, then sometimes it's Corey Kispert as the low man, and that's just not going to end well for Washington. And so, like, I'm more interested in him being aggressive and getting those reps when he's alongside JV, so he has a little bit more margin for error for the defense overall. So I'm keeping an eye on that part. But yeah, he's Clay, man. Curious to see what it's going to turn into.
Steve looked like he had a take here. I was curious.
You just called him Clay Thompson? That's crazy.
You know what? That's a good shot. That's fine. Moving to Stephon Castle in San Antonio. 11.5 points per game so far, 3.7 assists, 2.5 boards, nearly a steal per game, 46% on twos, 28% from three. UConn bias here, so I'm not going to go first. Sam, what have you seen from Stephon Castle so far?
I mean, like, I have similar UConn bias. I just love watching that team play. Well. So they're unbelievable. They do things incredibly intelligently there, even though they have just lost three in a row in Maui as we record this. Yeah, look, the thing with Castle is he just knows how to help a team win. If you look at his on-offs this year, they have a plus 2.6 net rating when he's on the court, a minus 4.6 net rating when he's off the court. It is exceedingly rare for rookies to help a team just through his sheer presence on the court. I think a big reason for that is having a presence like Chris Paul there next to him that is really solid, that doesn't put all of the ball handling pressure on Steph, but he is able to be a secondary ball handler out there who can make quick decisions to either cut or to take a ball screen or to reverse the ball quickly. And that's the thing with Steph that I've always loved, the processing ability. I think he processes the game really, really quickly, very similar to Risa Shea in terms of the cutting ability. I think he consistently finds open cuts, really is good at timing help the helper cuts, where as soon as he sees his man go and help the helper, he's going to find that crease and find that cutting spot in order to potentially get a pass, sometimes from Wemby on the block, particularly. I mean, defensively, he's outstanding. I love him. On defense, he's just an absolute dude on that end. He is so physical. He's tough. He is capable of guarding 1 through 4, in my opinion. Slides his feet incredibly well. I think he navigates screens well for a rookie. Rookie screen navigation tends to be an adventure for the most part in the NBA, but I think he figures it out at a really high level. UConn guys in general, I think, are pretty good at that for the most part. Whatever they're teaching there, I think they do a really good job. With him, it's just like he doesn't shoot it well right now, and that's the issue.
I'll jump in very quickly, Nikias, and just say it's been the driest for me. The aggression he has, the pace that he plays with the throws. He can go very quick if he's spaced on the perimeter, but he can also hit you with the hesitation and then go, and that's a really good blend. I think being able to change speeds, really important and a good indicator for a young guard, so I'd like to see that.
Yep.
And some of the control he's shown playmaking-wise as far as understanding what a defense is trying to do. We go pass and cut. I take an extra dribble. The big engages. I know the pocket pass is there. They're trying to keep it on the side and pick and roll. Okay, let me go down there, engage the big, see if there's a play to be made or a pass to be made. Obviously, you know, young guy, so it's going to be up and down, but that's the kind of stuff I look for to be like, hey, this is progress. If you're showcasing that, you're able to get in the paint, you have that aggressive mindset, but you can also read the defense and make plays. You know, it's funny, any team that wants to go out there and switch, he takes the switch and then immediately crosses over and goes the other way almost every time. And it's just like, okay, this is good stuff. This is a good base. So I've liked that.
I think the pacing is what has stood out to me since I've watched him. And being able to shift speeds is one thing. Like, the setups before shifting speeds is what gets me. Like, it's very Garland-esque, and I'm going to take two dribbles over here to cross over to use the screen, or let me fake this way and then reject. He just does a really good job of setting up this defender. And once he's able to lead the dance, again, that control just kind of pops inside the arc. I would like for him to have a floater or pull up too that he's comfortable with and can knock down with a level of consistency to really open things up for him. Like, I would like for him to shoot. Like, when he's been on some of the random heaters this year and he's taking pull up threes in rhythms, like, oh, well, this is interesting, but I don't know how real that is yet. But the poise and the patience and just the general pace that he plays with, I've really liked that part. Defensively, you've already hit on the screen navigation and how tough he is. Like, he holds up well against switches. The off-ball stuff, it's general rookie stuff. But I do have, like, I think it's the first Utah meeting just burned in my brain to where it is just, hey, flash to the middle. We're going to go flex. And then we have an action layered after that. Let's see what you want to do with it.
Yeah.
And they just had Utah just picks at you in that way. So I don't really hold them to the fire that much on that. But it can get a little funny, especially early in the year when San Antonio was trying to figure out what they wanted to do with their switching and with their help. I feel like they've settled in since then. But I am a fan. I want them to shoot, but that guy knows how to play basketball. So it's a thumbs up for me on that front.
Yeah. Total thumbs up. I would have him in the top three for rookie of the year right now. His impact on the game is just really, really high level. And I'm really glad that, you know, Steve brought up the drives. In general, Stephon Castle just plays with a level of decisiveness that I appreciate. I think that is kind of the biggest word for him that tracks for me. He's just a decisive player. He knows what to do. He is consistently in the right spots on the court and consistently makes the right decisions.
There we go. All right. Last lottery guy we'll talk about today, and then we'll bounce around a little bit to close things out. Donovan Klingon from Portland. Haven't seen him in a little bit, but 5.8 points, 6.7 rebounds, 3.2 of those on the offensive glass, 2.2 blocks per game. Seb, what have you seen from Klingon since we're already on the UConn tip?
So I didn't even think about that. That's a good transition. But with Klingon, what I like is that I don't know necessarily what the on-off numbers say. I feel like they are drastically better when he is out there. And the big reason why is he actually sets real screens. And there are other bigs. Unfortunately, Rob Williams sets real screens. Rob Williams is like a, you know, really figured out like how to flip screens, how to set up screens and get into different step ups and things like that. But DeAndre Ayton does not. And it drives me out of my mind watching DeAndre Ayton. Klingon is excellent at all of this stuff. Klingon can run dribble handoffs. He can reject dribble handoffs into passes. He has the ability to find cutters. He can reject dribble handoffs into dribble handoff resets. Like, he is just really comfortable out on the perimeter. And he also has a lot of the like little dark art screening things that, you know, he'll set like a little ass out screen. He'll go to the rim and like Gortat and just like seal a dude off in order to help Shaedon Sharpe get to the basket. I think he does all of the little things already that really, really help Portland win basketball games at the end of the day. And, you know, look, they're not a great team, obviously. This is not a particularly good team in the NBA, but I really, really appreciate the little things. And then defensively, he's just a monster on the interior. He takes up so much space. He's so large and knows how to use his length really, really well. Fouling was an issue, especially early in the season. I think he's kind of adjusted to the physicality a little bit already in terms of like understanding what he can do in terms of like using his length, retreating backward as he goes up to contest. Definitely has some moments where he'll fall for pump fakes particularly and will get hit that way. But the other thing with him I'll say is too, I do feel like he's and look, Nikias, you'll probably be able to answer this too. Like, I feel like he's a touch heavier than what he was at Connecticut mm-hmm. right now. And I think that it would really behoove him to like get into elite shape. If he gets into like truly elite shape, like he was particularly that first year at UConn, the second year, you know, he ended up ballooning up like in the middle of the season because he got the foot injury and then had to like take the weight off throughout the course of the year. I think that if he can continue to just be at a steady weight by staying healthy, you know, Steve doesn't know this, but like Klingon was like well over 300 pounds when he was in what, sophomore, junior year, something like that of high school, and started to wear the weight off as a senior and then going into his freshman year at Connecticut. He's at his best when he is in pristine shape. Right now, I think he's carrying just like a touch extra weight, and you haven't gotten to see quite the movement laterally that I think he's capable of.
I'll jump in again before you go full UConn, Nikias. I think he's got that dog in him. I didn't know how much dog he would bring to the table. I think kind of to bounce off what Sam was talking about defensively, what impresses me is the timing that he has, because he's in a deep drop. Like, he is back there. And that is a tricky scenario for bigs to deal with in today's NBA, especially a rookie big. And so some of the flashes you see of him being able to, if a guard attacks that space, slide, keep it in front, and then contest. If they hit the big on the short roll, his ability to recover and get a contest on that shot. That's good timing. That's good stuff. That's what made Brook Lopez elite. Like, I'm not saying apples to apples, but that's what turned Brook Lopez into the elite defender, where I'm lights out timing-wise in the paint, and you're going to have a tough day. So for him to have that already is fantastic. I am intrigued to kind of see, as there's more tape on him, how do teams try and get him? Do we try and kind of drive at him with our big? Do we try and mix different things up? Do we take advantage of his sometimes magnetism to the paint? That intrigues me. But the defense has intrigued me. I think to the screening point, one thing I love, he's very good when it comes to rescreens with his timing.
Yeah.
If you go one way, he's right there on the next one. He's going to get you, and he's going to get out into his role. And especially if they're lower on the court sometimes, it's automatic. It's pretty easy. He takes one foot, he's in the paint. So I liked what I've seen. Go ahead, guys.
I don't know. I'm not going to hang here too long. Y'all have pretty much nailed what I wanted to talk about. I think on the screening point, like, I'm intrigued by just the depth of the screens, period. Because I think in a perfect world, Portland would like to set higher ones with him because of how good of a screener he is. Let's free Anthony Simons. Let's free Shaedon Sharpe. Let's just give them a runway. I think because, I guess touching on the weight point and just in general, the foot speed with him, I think that's probably why you see more of the lower one set for him. Just because he just needs time to get to the spot. And at that point, we just kind of load up and reset against whoever the ball handler is. So I'm curious to see like how that portion of the program is going to develop. One thing I have liked that they've kind of sprinkled in, if they set a higher one and it's kind of like a delayed roll for him, they'll pitch it back to him. And that kind of operates as the rescreen. And then you get into that lower action anyway. So like that part's cool. But then even with that, depending on who they have in the lineup, teams can just kind of help off of someone one pass away or whatever. So I have liked the idea of that. I just want to see how that continues to develop defensively. Again, you've already mentioned it. He's a monster at the rim. He's a monster on the glass, period, which I think just generally helps Portland. Let's get out and run since this guy's just cleaning all the stuff. I guess the last thing I'll say quickly, like, it's not a high volume, but it is just funny watching him take threes at random. I don't know what to do with that part. Like, defenses aren't going to guard him like he's Cat. But, like,
I do. Cut it out. Cut it out for now. Let's stop it. I am Mr. Like, hey, spacing fives are, like, the big marginal advantage in the NBA right now. He can't shoot yet. We need to not do this. Maybe in 3 years, like, that'd be cool. Like, he has some touch, but... No, he can't shoot yet. Stop doing this. I know that Portland is saying like they're excited about him shooting. Like, they want him to shoot these because they think it's a big part, but like, shit, like I don't think he can shoot right now. Like, it's okay to admit that. Let's just play to his strengths a little bit. Have him short roll, have him get into the paint, have him seal guys. Like, don't always just pop. Like, not always. He doesn't always pop, but like, I don't really see the impact of a pop unless he's getting into like a specific set where he's going to set like a reset DHO or something like that.
Okay. Anti-threes for Donovan Clingan. I respect the take.
Maybe in the future, but for now, we got to stop it.
That's fair. That's fair.
Steve's like in shock right now.
It's less you. I'm more Nakai is just kind of sitting there. It's moving me, but it's okay.
a pristine 33% from three on a 9 total attempts this year for Donovan Clingan. We'll go quickly hit on the guard room very quickly. Jared McCain. Averaging 16 points per game, shooting darn near 38% from three on high volume. Where did this come from? Like, was this a reasonable high-end outcome for Jared McCain coming in?
I always thought that people underrated his ceiling a little bit. I had him as a lottery guy because guys who can shoot like this and also are, like, elite character kids and elite workers and, like Duke would tell people, he is literally the best kid we've had in the weight room. Like, in like forever, basically. Like, he was unbelievable at always getting in extra work, always getting in extra shots. So like, when you have that shooting ability to fall back on, you're a really intelligent kid and you have the crazy work ethic. I think that those are the kids that can like way exceed what the physical tools are, right? He is, if you see him, like, I don't know if you guys have seen him in person yet. he is fucking enormous through like his lower half. Like his calves are enormous. Like his legs, like he is huge. And he's able to deal with bumps, I think, at a better rate than what other people do, like expect maybe from him.
Yeah.
What I would say is that the ball skills, I think, are a little bit advanced compared to what we had seen previously at Duke. And even like in high school a little bit, he's clearly taken a bit of a jump there, in my opinion. But what he does so much of is something that he did all the time at Duke. He's just unbelievable at relocating, at finding different areas, at, you know, he'll see a offensive rebound happen. He immediately relocates and finds like the open passing lane. In addition to being away from his defender, he will kick the ball off to the corner off of a drive and then immediately shoot back out to the 3-point line and find like an open shot that way. He's just really, really sharp at hunting shots. And what he's always been elite at is finding transition threes. He is elite at kind of sinking behind the ball handler in transition, being able to get like a quick little pitch back, dribble handoff, whatever it is. And then also he just is elite at finding the corners, finding the wings, stopping, popping, hitting those shots. I think he hit transition threes at like a 50% clip last year. It was ridiculous. So having that ability, I think, has given him a real baseline to start his career. What I didn't necessarily expect is the ball skill to be as advanced as it is.
Okay, Steve, what have you seen?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned kind of the ball handling, the ball skill, because I think for me, you see the shiftiness that he plays with. You know, I think I probably lean on it too much as far as someone playing at their own speed, playing at their own pace, but he really kind of just comes at you in not like a Malcolm Brogdon-esque, but he's coming at you with speed that could go faster, but you don't know when it's going to. And I like that fact that he's able to kind of shift and do that and read the defense and understand, okay, if you're going to be all the way back there, I know how much time I have to kind of take that space up. Never feels he's going too fast, never feels like he's going too slow. And that's an important thing to have, and to be able to use him on ball, off ball. I know the scoring stands out, but I've liked the playmaking. Like, I've liked how he kind of knows and understands, okay, I don't have to over penetrate on this play. I can read the defense and kind of get a lob if I get one dribble off. Like I wish we could see him play more with Embiid to a degree. Because he has such a good job of reading and understanding, oh, I might be trying to drive, but you have a seal. Let me throw it to you. So he makes those little type of plays. And then I think for me, defensively, when you watch him, I look at him on the weak side. It's not a perfect world, but some of the things he does activity-wise on the weak side, understanding I need to be in, the ball's coming my way, I need to get back out. It's a very little thing, but it's something that a lot of players don't necessarily get these days. And so I'm happy to see a young fella get it.
I love the weak side defense shot for Jarrett McCain. Like, I think, one, it's good to see him nail that portion. Like, as with all the guards we've talked about at this point, like, we'll see where the screen navigation lands. We'll see how he deals with drives. I think offensively, outside of the shooting, like, just his ability to deal with contact and the shots that he's able to create inside the arc, I think, has been the most fun for me outside of the ridiculous shooting. Because he just gets to some of these scoops, just absorb the contact, get to the scoop, or I'm going to change when I'm gathering. You think you have a beat on when to contest the shot. Actually, the ball's already at the top of the square. You didn't know I was getting rid of it already. Like, I love the craft, as cliche as that sounds, but I just love the craft that he has inside the arc. He's converted 54% of his twos already. And like, that's not what it's supposed to look like, especially when you consider what Philly's roster context has been for most of the year. And so the fact that he's been able to find a level of success inside the arc, and to Steve's point about the playmaking, like, teams have experimented with putting two on the ball against him. He just gets off of it. Like, he doesn't seem like afraid of the trap. Like, he's very much, I'm just going to do my job. And because I move well enough off the ball, I may just get it back anyway. It's like, he's just playing the game at an advanced level right now.
And I think to bounce off of Sam's strength point, you look at his footwork and how quickly he's able to get into his shot. Like you mentioned how he deals with contact, Nikias. You see these drives where it looks like, okay, he's in trouble. Drive left, it looks like he's about to be cut off. And then 2 seconds later, he's planted at both of his feet and he's gotten a step back off. Or he's spun into a quick shot. And the way he's able to set that up, it's not, everyone can't do that. So that it's been fun to watch him do that.
Yeah, and you know, it was funny. I broke down one of his games over on the YouTube channel and like, he tried a like one hand gather, scoop, like finger roll shot, probably four separate times, probably two with each hand. I think he missed all of them, but I was just like, I like that he's doing this. This is the critical skill for him to be able to finish at the rim and to consistently be able to get this off against bigger, taller, stronger guys. He's going to have to throw it off with timing with different little gathers like that. Defensively, I am lower on him defensively by and large than maybe what you guys are. I think that particularly when he's off the ball and they run a guard through an action, like if they run, you know, two straight down screens for a guard to come off and curl or to come off and take a three, I think that he is a little bit late reacting to those and isn't able to lock and trail. And when you are him and you are 6'2" with like a 6'3.5" wingspan or whatever, you just have no margin for error at the end of the day. And I feel like he still is struggling with that a little bit. And then on the ball, I mean, I think you guys kind of mentioned the screen navigation. Like he just is not, he's really struggling in terms of being able to stay in front of anybody on the ball, I feel like. So that's where the next step is for him, is being able to consistently find a way to stay connected, I feel like, when he's being screened both on and off the ball.
I got you. That'll do it for me with Jared McCain thoughts. I have issues. Now, I was like, do I want to hit this point? I'm also just looking, we can cut this part. But like, I was also looking at the clock. I was like, well, actually, no. Let me see if I get another player in before everybody has to go. So that's what that was.
Let's blame me for this one. So we'll take people behind the curtain. I ended up like 10 minutes late to this recording and we have like a little bit of a hard out. So we'll blame me, not Nikias, for that one.
No, I'm blaming Nikias. It's more fun that way.
That's true.
I love to be a little messy. Speaking of,
tremendous transition from Steve. Eve Bissy. Steve, would you like to start with Eve Bissy thoughts?
I mean, he just does a job. That's been the thing I always let the defense really sit out as far as understanding the timing of how to execute defensively in pick and roll, the rotations on ball, like even when he wasn't necessarily involved in the action, his timing was just dead on. And then offensively, screen roll, this is what I do. I do it every night. You know what you're going to get. Let's have some fun. So I've enjoyed Eve Smithy.
So, yeah, I kind of mentioned this in a previous section, but in case people are jumping around to try and find specific players, I'll mention it again. I like how streamlined his process is offensively, where, okay, I'm going to set a screen and I'm going to rim run to the rim, or I'm going to catch a short roll. And if there's a man in front of me, I'm going to go to the corner directly, like literally every time. You can see it's been drilled into him ridiculously well that he's going weak side corner every time, up to the weak side wing, back to reverse to reset the play if he has to, right? So I like that that is there already. And if he has a downhill lane, I mean, it's curtains. Good. Like he's a joke athlete. Like he is probably one of the 6 or 7 best athletes among centers in the NBA, if not better than that. His issue is that I think people think of him as being a little bit bigger than what he is because he plays so above the rim. He's like 6'10.5". Like he's not one of these super giants, right? And I feel like I feel that more defensively. Like I agree with you, Steve, generally that he knows where to be, but I will say that sometimes I feel like he gets kind of caught in no man's land in drop coverage. Like Atlanta beat him like downhill, getting behind him in drop with Trey being able to throw up lobs to Onyeka. And I think Clint caught him once as well. So that's going to be the key, is kind of managing that space a little bit as a guy who's not, you know, 7 foot with a 7'4" wingspan like Donovan Clingan. He's like 6'10.5" with a 7'2" wingspan, and being able to manage that space in drop is going to be critical for him.
Got you. Like, I almost wonder, like, if he is going to be better next to someone else, like kind of similar to the SAR conversation. Like, is there a big that they can find to kind of unleash him a little bit defensively so he doesn't have to navigate the drop as often as he does? I think he clearly has the athleticism for it. And like some of the reps where he's at the level have been interesting to me. But then offensively, like you better keep a body in front. And even if you do keep a body in front, he made this jump over you anyway. So like I've enjoyed that portion. Like I've enjoyed the screening. Like I wouldn't say it's A+ stuff. Like I think just because of some of the rookie bigs that we've had come out the last 2 or 3 draft classes, like I, for one, just kind of applaud when a screen just commits to getting contact. before rolling, because some of the other bigs that have come out just haven't gotten that part from day one. So, like, I do enjoy that he does his job. He does his work there. And as you mentioned, decision-making is pretty straightforward for him. So I've liked that. Last one that we can get out of here. Kyle Filipowski seems to be a big that both of you have enjoyed in different spots this year. Steve, what have you liked from Kyle Filipowski so far this year?
The aggression. That man said, I can do Lauri Markkanen and stuff. I promise you I can. Run me off, Staggers. I can curl and attack.
Yeah.
I can get to my shot. Don't worry about it. That's where I was like, oh, this man is playing like a three right now. So I've just kind of like the moxie for the most part, as far as understanding, you know, he's willing to try and get to his spots, willing to attack. And so I've kind of respected that to a degree to where I didn't necessarily think he had that in him to that degree. But that works in Utah, a place where we take your skill set and we try and maximize it. Doesn't matter what size you are. We'll invert the offense and execute and use you in different ways. So it was more of a, hey, I think there's a little bit more here than I thought than anything else.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other thing with that too, is like, to your point in terms of the moxie, right? Like, I feel like teams early on tried to attack him defensively a little bit. And I feel like as the season has gone on, they've realized, oh no, wait, there are just better players we can attack. Like, instead of him, like, we should just attack Keyonte George every time, or we should attack somebody else who's out there. I think he competes on defense. Like, he's really active and aggressive and moves his feet well and tries as hard as he can out there. And because he's 7 foot tall and I think moves his feet better than what other people do, he's okay. Like, I'm not sitting here telling you he's going to be like some impact defender or anything, but I don't think he's a sieve out there on defense either, which is really critical as he looks to try and craft a role moving forward within just like a very funky offense, like Steve said, where they're going to just be like, okay, whatever you can do, we're going to make it work within our offense and we're going to craft around your skill set. And he has a lot of skills on offense. Like, he has a real touch. He has the ability to shoot. He can pass a little bit. Like, there's a lot there, I think, that Utah is going to be able to work with. And he was one of my favorites. Like, he ended up falling to the second round for reasons. Mm-hmm. We'll go with reasons. And I thought that was crazy. Like, I had him at like 17, 16, somewhere on my board. Like, guys who are 7 foot, who compete on defense, who have this skill set. Like, it's just hard to, he might not be a starter long term, but like, it's hard to see how that like totally fails to me.
Yeah, he just slots in nicely offensively with the way Utah moves everyone around. And defensively, I'm still trying to wrap my head around Utah just being the switchiest defense in the NBA. Like, that is just a number that I can't wrap my head around. But to your point, like, he's held up pretty well. Like, I think back to the NBA Cup game with the Lakers where Austin Reeves kept trying to go at him and it was just like, no.
Yeah.
Actually, I'm just going to challenge a shot to rim. I'm going to slide. I'm going to make you pick up your dribble. And it's like, okay, well, this is pretty nice. So we can leave it there. Sam, final question for you. Where can the people find you? Where can the people find your work?
Go to The Athletic. I will do draft stuff over there, probably some NBA stuff. I'm getting together a trade deadline big board right now, trying to figure out who's available, who's not available. And then, you know, Game Theory Podcast. You can find it on YouTube. You can find it on whatever podcasting platform that you listen to. And, you know, Bryce Simon and I, we break down draft prospects. We talk about the NBA. We do a whole lot of stuff. And then on the YouTube channel, I go live maybe two or three times a week. And after games, just talk about games and break down tape and have a lot of fun.
Hey, may we run this back, huh?
I'd love to. Let's do rookie. I'm here to do rookie report anytime you guys want to. I'm here.
Boom. Nikias, I booked a guest.
There we go. We will absolutely hold you to it. Thank y'all for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us.
Yeah,
that's what the RIP is for. You can follow me on Blue Sky at Nikias NBA. Apparently, you are not allowed to follow Steve. Okay,
no.
Fair enough. Sam just gave you the info, so you can follow
him. Why is Steve out on Blue Sky?
He's there.
Don't,
but it's
follow
a,
me.
the nonsense from the other app has just ruined Steve. So we are not allowed to follow him anymore. Join us for our online.
Oh, to be clear, it ruined me yesterday. I got deep in the weeds, just like complaining about people. So I'm here with Steve on this one.
very funny interaction that you had with that person. But you can join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. If you have League Pass, you can watch games live with us. We let the hair down a little bit, but we're still...
Link in bio!
There you go. The link is in the bio. Free to create your profile. So sign up, come rock with us, come watch some hoops with some cool folks. And with that, we will catch y'all next week.
Great show.